Wellness Voyager Radio, self-development radio for the open mind. Interviews with leading-edge authors and speakers, psychic phenomena and the unexplained, UFOs, extraterrestrial encounters, government cover-ups, alternative health care, new technologies. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes for Timeless Voyager Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, Timeless Voyager Radio. With me today, my guest, Kevin Ryerson, the trans channel who was very important in the book Out on a Limb, written by Shirley MacLaine. He was the gentleman who pretty much took channeling and brought it right out on the screen on television. Welcome to the show, Kevin.
Hey, thank you for having me today.
This is the third time, I think, that you and I have talked, or perhaps the fourth.
I'd like to think of it as third. Third is usually a charm.
Right. I'm very happy to have you on the show. I'm glad we linked up today. What have you been doing these days? I realize that you're spending a great deal of time on the road, but what has been coming through? Some new information at all that people might be interested in?
Well, actually, the thing that has been channeled through by Spirit that seems to be of interest to quite a few folks is Spirit or channeling has been traditionally used as a source of insight for society and culture. Edgar Cayce, for instance, was known as the sleeping prophet. And the whole concept behind prophecy is not only to predict the future, but to give us insights into the way that we as a society and a culture can live. And what's been being described is rather intriguing. It was predicted a number of years ago that there would be the reemergence of new spiritual paradigms, so the way entire societies and cultures would begin to look at themselves. It was predicted that old political systems would begin to dissolve and a more new and free dialogue would exist amongst people independent of political and social filters. Well, I think with the changes that are occurring in the so-called Eastern Bloc nations, the more open dialogues between East and West and the greater cultural exchange that's occurring, along with the intriguing, almost renaissance in the interest of mythology, such as through the Joseph Campbell series or the Bill Moyers series of the World of Ideas on PBS, that people are being more open in these spiritual dialogues. People are looking to their inner psychic resources, and that a whole new worldview is beginning to emerge. People are opening up and they're looking more at the roots of their humanity as a solution to issues versus necessarily the ideas of strictly political systems and or isms. So it's intriguing to me to see a lot of the prophecies and predictions made by both Edgar Cayce and a number of insights that were provided even on a couple of programs that we were on from just a few years ago, more or less beginning to emerge in this period of time.
Now we're even seeing the fact that for years the idea of certainly mediumship was regarded somehow as being strange, weird, something that people did in dark rooms and no one spoke about it, and it was something that you should be afraid of. Do you agree with me that that's changing also?
Well, I think that what it is that it's really more that, the correct image of what psychism, channeling, and extraperceptory perception is has actually always been at times presented before the public. I always point out that Edgar Cayce, The Sleeping Prophet, for instance, was published between 68 and 69. There was on the cover of Time magazine in the mid-70s, an article referred to as Boom Times on the Psychic Frontier about scientific investigation of the paranormal. In the 80s, there were major articles in Time, Newsweek, major television coverage, all of which, in my opinion, continue to reinforce the interest in both channeling and extrasensory perception. In my opinion, the correct image has always been there. It has been somewhat, if you will, well received by the public. To me, it's what it is that the correct image is getting reinforcement. It's like anything else in our society. It's a process of evolution. It's always been present. It's just more clearly beginning to emerge out of some of the older descriptions.
Kevin is a trans channel, and as a matter of fact, why don't we describe that idea? Because even though Edgar Cayce was known as a sleeping prophet, I presume he was actually a trans channel. Is that correct?
Yes, he displayed what's called trans-channeling faculties. Trans-channeling really isn't as complicated as some people believe. Any one of the listeners has probably had an experience when carrying on a conversation with someone, that person may ask a question, and it may trigger almost like a memory search or a daydreaming response on that person's part. And when they come back, they don't consciously recall all the conversation they had with the person, but they do remember having both the answer to the question that was posed, and they do remember having the insight much more clearly. Well, that daydreaming response or that sleep-like response is what channels have taught themselves to tap into more at will. And it is the belief of the channel that they are also, in that state of consciousness, able to tap into other times, other cultures, and extrasensory perceptions, and to allow other levels of intelligence to speak through, not just their own subconscious or collective unconscious, but other souls from other times and cultures.
Now, that's always been a question, too. I think a lot of people wonder when a different entity comes through and has a particular name, even if perhaps it's a particular personality. I think a lot of people question whether that's contrived or not, and I'm sure that's been asked of you.
Actually, to me, what channeling itself is a process. It's a creative resource for information, insight, and inspiration. The historicity of the entities and the literalness may be somewhat open to question at this point in time, but the intention of channels is not always necessarily to prove the historicity of the entities. The feeling is that whatever channeling may be, whether it's a creative process, such as artists and authors work with. For instance, Alice Walker says, "I do not so much write as I go where my characters are comfortable, then they will speak to me." And her writings contain very authentic, historically accurate perspectives. So many writers are quite astounded at how accurately they convey the context of ancient cultures that they are writing about, some which even seems to supersede any study that they went to put into their historical novels. It's almost as though they were tapping into those cultures. Such things are not contrived so much as they are presented creatively, accurately, and inspirationally, and they add to information that can help improve the quality of people's lives. Channels take that process one step further. Their belief is they're tapping into other times and cultures. The value of that is self-apparent, for instance, because we are now studying the Incan cultures and their ancient canal systems to add insights into the way in which we can improve our agriculture and horticulture. So not only can the entities tap into knowledge from their own time period, they can also apparently see somewhat ahead of our development in our times and culture and offer insights and information that can help us work with who we are in the here and now.
Now, this particular concept of channeling, this was very prevalent certainly during the time of Egypt when they had oracles, which were nothing more than people whose specific job was to channel a particular entity. Isn't that correct?
Quite correct. As a matter of fact, our society is not devoid of that. Our temples or institutions are such things nowadays as banking institutions, financial institutions, or scientific institutions. Our oracles are what we refer to as our think tanks. And many of our best so-called thinkers acknowledge that it's not so much a thinking process, so much as it's a thought process that's intuitive and that their insights border at times on what is genuinely described as psychic.
So what you're saying then, Kevin, and I think for the listeners too, is the idea that, that there is on the outside perhaps, someplace, an origin of thought that we can pick up on or channel it from that particular place. Certainly that's what Plato was talking about in the world of the ideal.
Yes, the concept of the ideal I think is a very good one. Carl Jung referred to it as the collective unconscious. Was the idea that certain concepts, certain ideas, certain emotions and feelings that people have are universal and are easily transferable to other persons, and that these ideas continue to incubate until either the times or people who can comprehend them will eventually surface. And sometimes these happen independent of the person's study or background. And then that is what we refer to as a psychic insight. But the key is to use the entire process in a creative and constructive manner, which, time allowing, I think that we might be able to demonstrate in today's program.
I'm looking forward to that, and I know that a lot of our listeners are also. Kevin, we've actually not talked too much in the past about your past. I was wondering if you could share with us how this all started for you.
I started out as a child.
Okay.
Quite literally, I had interest in ESP, extrasensory perception, because they were experiences that I had as a kid. And I began looking up words like dreams and telepathy in the Encyclopedia Britannica, and was quite astounded to find that the descriptions in those authoritative tomes sounded, quite frankly, like the experiences I had. Throughout high school, I began reading the Edgar Cayce material, began looking at parapsychology, which is the scientific research into these affairs, and then at the ripe old age of 21, began working with meditation as a creative resource. And out of meditation, the talent known as channeling more or less began to evolve. And the way I put it, when other kids was putting together model airplanes and went on to become flight engineers, I was studying ESP and Zener cards and eventually began to pursue parapsychology as a career perspective.
Did you have support from your family?
I think to a certain degree. I think that all kids have a tendency to be supported in their families, in their hobbies, because that's the way I treated it. Actually, when I was in high school, I made a couple attempts to organize an ESP club. I think that, to put it in perspective, having matured during the 60s, per se, the consciousness movement was pretty much in full swing. A lot of these things, again, were pretty much in open dialogue at the period of time that I had such an acute interest in it.
Now, later on, of course, you made quite a bit of history as far as notoriety is concerned by being or having met Shirley MacLaine.
Yes, I would like to think that not only was there an issue of notoriety involved, I actually think that there's been some pretty solid social dividends that have come out of the whole so-called New Age perspective, or certainly the dialogue on it. Causally speaking, the phenomena known as the harmonic convergence, in my opinion, which was referred to by Essence Magazine as a psychic Woodstock, which is a benign interpretation that it was a watershed event for the New Age community, in the sense that any time you get that many people together harmoniously, whose intent is in dealing in world peace, you have a positive shift in the value systems by which people examine and look at themselves. The harmonic convergence predicted that approximately 3.5 years after its occurrence, there would be unprecedented points in history for opportunities for world peace. Now, whether it was synchronistic, because I certainly don't think it was coincidence, the Berlin Wall coming down almost precisely to the date, in my opinion, fulfilled that particular social prediction.
Would you like to describe, just maybe quickly to our audience, how you perceive your change, the way that you bring an entity through?
Yes. First of all, an idea of who the entities are. They're personalities from other times and other cultures. They speak through because the soul which does survive the physical transition we refer to as death and dying, such as demonstrated in the life after life documentation of Raymond Moody, Dr. Raymond Moody, in the so-called documentation of near-death experiences, that the soul is the carrier of intelligence and growth in us as human beings. These are merely personalities that from other times and cultures. The entity John is a member of the Hebrew sect known as the Essenes. Why would he speak through? Well, for instance, with the intense interest in the release of the Dead Sea Scrolls and the rest of the material there, these are things that are having impact on the culture today. So it would make sense that a soul, maybe preceding its incarnation, for instance, for experience in this time, may speak through and give insights to persons, not only from their time, but in the ways in which they are being affected in the here and now by past lives. In contrast to John, there is an entity by the name of Tom McPherson from the Elizabethan time period, who on occasion speaks through. There is also an entity by the name of Atun Re, who is an old Egyptian, who on occasion speaks through. Each of the entities has their own unique dialect. Each of the entities usually speaks on a subject material of some degree of spiritual relevance that holds people's interest and fascination.
Now, for those of you who are listening, Timeless Voyager Radio, this is Bruce Stephen Holmes. Kevin Ryerson is about to channel the entity John. John, welcome to the program. Just a few questions. We have movements in our society in the late 20th and early 21st century right now. One of them is called the Goddess Movement, and the other is the Men's Movement. And I was wondering if you could comment on what the spiritual core of these movements are and what they mean in our times.
The concept of the Goddess is a return of the need of the appreciation as though of the earth. The Goddess has always been associated as though with the need, the fertility, and the understanding, and the sensitivity to the needs of the earth as a living organism. The so-called movement, known as the ecology movement, which is an attempt to restore both the intellectual, emotional, and feeling sensitivity as though towards the earth, is part of the key here. For the Goddess has always been believed as though to be the life giver. The caretakers of these, which have been as though traditionally as though found in the expression of women, is the understanding as though that in the psychological makeup as though of women, women often as though turn towards these causes, not as persons socially disinvested, but as persons whose intuitive and psychic insights realize as though the needs as though of the planet, and are those who are so often as though aligned with as though the direction of that which is life-promoting insight. The so-called men's movement is an attempt to restore as though a spiritual integrity to men by aligning as though them with their spiritual intent, which is to be able to, by reattuning as though to their emotions, to their feelings, to their psychic development. They are recapturing as though both the godlike and goddess-like principles within themselves. By doing this, they then begin to as though to emerge as much more as though balanced within as though their appropriate relationship to women in say. So therefore the so-called goddess movement and the so-called men's movement are truly as though both spiritual movements in and of themselves. They move independent of any political or social structure and are truly as though to recapture the psychic and spiritual imagery that is inside of each and every person. It is not to restore a patriarchal or matriarchal perspective with men or women, either one being superior, but more so the balance, the role, and the position that all persons have played. Pause, and a desire to speak. finally being called on sooner, and I would come to speak with you. So, you are asking about the issues of so-called goddess and so-called men's movement. Is that so?
Yes, just kind of listening to that point that John brought up, that it's a very spiritual movement.
Yes, well, it is not only spiritual. First of all, as an old Egyptian, the concept of deities, gods, and goddesses was more common to our own culture. In your own so-called modern era, your attempt was, by the very term modern, to strip away everything that you considered dysfunctional. Well, if you will, it was too radical a surgery, because you cut away almost everything that also had meaning. I love your term that says you must trim things to the bone. But what it is that the only thing when you trim to the bone left over is the skeleton. And you've stripped away, if you will, all the meat, all the tissue that makes you a living organism. Primarily, the men's movement is not so much a counterbalance or a reaction to the political women's movement. It is more in response to the so-called goddess movement and shouldn't be called so much a men's movement at all. Both of them, as you have correctly pointed out, are primarily spiritual movements. It is the idea that inside of men are powerful psychic imagery of men as spiritual entities. The hunter, for instance, was one who was engaged in sacred rituals, attuned to the earth and the abundance that it offered. It was man showing humility before the goddess that John spoke of. And that the so-called goddess, if you will, movement is a reemergence of the spiritual sensitivities that arises out of the conflict that your materially based society is placed on an assault that is bringing about the mass extinctions of various species, the imbalance that it is causing in nature. But these conflicts exist strictly as challenges that arise out of your own nature, and as you become more harmonious in your inner psychic life. For instance, man's balance with nature and showing humility before the goddess, and women, if you will, respecting the imagery of men as life promoters also, can then bring about a better balance between both men and women, with respect then of the divine that exists between the both of them.
So this is what we're looking at, isn't it? We're looking at a balance. We're looking at a movement away from specific roles, and now what, perhaps a grouping or a balance of roles?
Well, I think that's what it is. It is the idea that the masculine and the feminine exist between both men and women. For instance, you take, for instance, a sacred moment such as birth. What it is that men, if you will, a true act of courage is to act as midwife to their own children. That what it is that at the time of birth, the infant, male or female, has no separation of identity from the original primary parent, which is the mother. But at the point of birth, if the child with umbilical cord still attached to the mother is held by the father having no capacity to immediately satiate the infant's need of security through satiating them materially, that is through the feeding through mother's milk, must satiate the infant's need for security through a strong, quiet presence. So thus it is a spiritual nurturing, and the child for the first time has the beginning of the development of identity through a strong, nurturing presence that does not satiate its immediate material needs. Then when the child is returned to the mother, who may help satiate that particular need, the child then comes into balance in both its spiritual and its need of material succor in accepting its identity here in the earth plane. This is the way that men and women would come truly into a better balance. Now, symbolically, this type of birthing process, if you will, can exist both in men and women. women, for instance, who have strong personalities are considered overly masculine. Yet virtually every one of those traits is appreciated in the male hunter in your so-called business society and social order. And the man who is gentle and kind is called so-called effeminate, or so-called, if you will, unmasculine. And yet it is a very critical key in the nurturing and the development of children. Once you begin to develop all qualities of your society and social order, and even your culture, and know that this is the way the spirit expresses itself, you have a much better balance in things.
Do you think that we are moving towards an androgynous physicality?
Well, I suppose to a certain degree that is part of the expression. I would say that it is more so that you are moving towards, if you will, a hermetic-like state. Hermes, if you will, the so-called Greek god, if you will, was so-called androgynous. And, if you will, you can see it at times in the qualities where men and women are becoming more equals. Androgynous, such as the so-called Michael Jackson, if you will, still, however, denote a correct balance in sensuality. It is that they appeal artistically both to men and women. But that principle existed much earlier, for instance, in such persons as in the elegance of your so-called Fred Astaire, who had mastered, if you will, the winning of women's hearts through dance, grace, and artistry. So it is much more integrated into your expressions of your society than what you might at first acknowledge.
I guess the situation is that we have been living so much in the world of appearances that we've lost touch with what this true spiritual part of our lives is about.
You can live in the world of appearances if you want to, as long as those appearances emerge with deeper psychic roots. For instance, you know, the leaves on a tree as it changes through the seasons is certainly appearances, but it alerts you to what is occurring in the awakening or the slumbering of the root systems from its deepest levels. There is nothing wrong with appearances as long as what is being shown is appropriate and comes from a deeper source.
I think what I'm referring to, though, is that, for example, in the Western world now in the 20th century...
You're talking of image orientation.
Yes, exactly, that we have spent a tremendous amount of time making sure that you could tell the difference between a quote-unquote man and a quote-unquote woman.
Yes, anyone who needs help in telling the difference between men and women probably needs all the help they can get.
For those of you who are listening, this is Bruce Stephen Holmes, Timeless Voyager Radio. We are speaking with, is this McPherson?
No, this is what you call Anton Ray. I had introduced myself before.
Okay, I missed that. Anton Ray.
McPherson, if you will, you would recognize distinctly as having what you call so-called Irish accent. What it is in your American tongue is you have lost virtually all your ear for the distinction of dialects.
Okay, Anton Ra and... we heard from John. These are entities that are coming through Kevin Ryerson, who I guess you could refer to as your oracle. Is that correct? You would use the term oracle?
Well, it is an honorable term for you, and so therefore I suppose it is, shall we say, applicable here. Most definitely.
Do you... I think a lot of people are interested in the relationship between entities and their quote-unquote oracles. Do these relationships start, let's say, in the spiritual realms before they become physical? Physical meaning that from our appearances, for example, Kevin all of a sudden begins to channel an entity. Does the entity pick out, or is this a prearranged agreement?
Well, I suppose it is similar to the way that you function with your so-called radio. You hold many negotiations and dialogues, if you will, and then you trust that the person will emerge at the right moment. Do you understand? Well, after a manner, there is a great deal that occurs in the so-called psychic world that is always not necessarily perceived on your conscious level.
spot, if you will, when the pre-agreed-upon dialogue occurs, all that was necessary to carry it out are present. Life itself is a lot like that.
So a person need not feel, and I think this is an important point, fearful that an entity were to come and take over their body.
Well, if you take a look at your body in particular, there are very few of you who are out there. You know, who are in that great a shape that we'd even want the thing if we wanted to take over it. You must agree.
I love that.
You know, that you know, not all of you are out there in the best of shape. Also, what it is that as spiritual beings, we are beings of light, quite elegant, and have a certain, a differing form of beauty, that after a manner you yourself with your aura possess it. But we are not interested in possessing bodies at all. What it is that we communicate through. But then again, so do many people. When you quote a great name, for instance, you know, to invoke the emotion of the listener, you are allowing temporarily not the crowding out of your own thoughts, but the lingering inspiration from a past personality to inspire your listener. So therefore, if you will, for that brief moment, you are possessed through the words of that great personality. And when those words ring in the emotion of the listener, they are also temporarily possessed. Your body is animated and inspired. The heart races quicker, and you are launched into action by great words and great poetry. If you would, you should allow for this possession to occur, but not in your so-called creepy great B movie way. That just does not occur.
All right, that's good to know, too, for those of you who are listening. What when an entity like yourself comes through, what do you, and I think the term is, what do you get out of it? What is your purpose?
What do I get out of it?
That's what we all, I mean, and I think I'm asking that question not in disrespect, but rather I think people have that question. In other words, why would an entity come through? If it's, you know, is it to teach?
Well, politicians have empty words to try and preserve your world for future generations. Your poets and musicians, however, send out a resounding and lyrical and elegant vibration through music and poetry to preserve your world for next generations. We are one step, if you will, further than the poet. We try to inspire you to become that essence that preserves the world for the next generation. Because if you will, the next generation, we may be part of those incarnating souls. If you will, we are part of humanity, not separate from it.
So, and that brings up the point of time here. I mean, for you, the next generation can be immediate, is that correct?
Well, for you too also. It is very brief between your generations. It used to be 25 years, now you become adult within 18 years. And you peel away the days of your calendar quite quickly. So if you will, time is speeding up even for you.
Now we've heard that. We've heard that time is collapsing. Why is that happening?
Well, what it is, for instance, look how many centuries used to go by between what you call significant invention. You know, what was it? You know, printing press, God knows how long ago. You know, finally steam engine, you know. Then so-called automobile. You went from horse and buggy era to walking on moon in approximately 50 years. You went from so-called horse and buggy era to so-called nuclear and photoelectric era in less than 50 years. So that in itself, in what is impacting society, speeding up. It will only continue to do so. You are living your own future.
So it's not as though time itself is collapsing, but rather our perception of what we are doing with our time. Is that what you're saying?
More accurately, time is collapsing. Time and consciousness are synonymous.
But you're not saying that consciousness is collapsing.
In many ways I am. What it is I'm saying, it is compressing. The word collapse implies failure. Compression implies a different form of strength, a different way of perceiving things.
All right, now let's just move on that for a second. Compressing, what would be the goal of that? Why would we be compressing? Why would it be compressing?
You would be compressing it for the simple reason that you are able to assimilate and willing to learn more. One thing that you have successfully done in your so-called modern era is you have shed a lot of superstition, which is rather wonderful. But throwing out the baby with the baptismal water, if you will, unfortunately you threw away a lot of spirituality and issues of consciousness. But you are more open nowadays to receiving new insights, new goals, new potential.
Does our society, or let's put it this way, do most societies move in a similar parallel manner? And I'm thinking right now of the Egyptian culture seem to have moved to a point of great spirituality to some point, an understanding of the higher laws. And we began as a new nation with certain goals and have moved into this capitalistic, very material system, and all of a sudden we seem to be regaining the idea of the spiritual laws. Is that something that happens to all societies as they grow?
Most definitely. Societies constantly oscillate between the spiritual and the material as their source of resolution. If spirituality becomes overly jaded and bureaucratized and becomes a religion and is no longer alive, and the rituals become empty and no longer inspirational, then society rapidly and probably quite accurately moves towards the material for its solutions. Because if you will, the spirituality is the very ability to invoke from what within the material what is worth having, so to say. For instance, an object as valuable art is a material object that purchased only for its monetary value, but it is spiritual and free to everyone who may see what was in it that the artist wished to preserve and to be able to invoke generations later.
So our growth then is in a sense, let's say, part of the evolutionary process. We don't really have much of a choice as a society. This is where we're going to go.
You don't have much of a choice because it is your very nature to grow. We must go soon.
Now, there's certainly a lot that we don't know about the cultures that have grown. For example, the Mayan culture comes to mind, where they literally, in a sense, disappeared off the face of the earth. What do you see as our direction?
Well, the Mayans did not so much disappear as they transformed. They experimented with the highly centralized cities, if you will, but found that their spiritism, which originally came as an agricultural, horticultural people, most closely linked with nature.
Now, you use the word cities. I didn't...
incubated by a return to the land, and if you will, the only occasional celebrational use of their temple centers.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but the word went by very fast, and for our listeners, I wanted to just mention that. You said their use of the cities. Is that correct? For our listeners, would you describe the cities to them?
Well, the mines and those temples are fairly well known to your people. They merely need to look at the pictures of Chichen Itza. There is usually a central core temple, usually to the major luminaries of the sun and the moon. And primarily the temples were used as a form of ceremony to act out, not ceremonial magic, but truly religious pageantries based on the issues and cycles, seasons, possessions, and histories of the people. It is a way of acting out their mythology to unify the people into one single feeling of integrity of themselves as the Mayan people.
So their entire focus at this particular point was definitely spirituality at this...
Yes, but it was spirituality to invoke what was necessary for the physical survival also. They organized, for instance, into the tasks of labor to harvest the fields. but it was with the appreciation of the spirit and the essence of every plant, every animal that was integrated into the framework of their society or culture.
Do you see a 20th century man with his Western technologies moving into the same spiritualism, but of course in a different way?
I see it as moving into the spiritualism as its new myths are beginning to emerge, most definitely.
All right.
We must go now. The Galtage home for many then became one. May this look after you.
Hail. Seek to be at peace with the things that you receive from spirit. Walk in this to Father, Mother, God's light. God bless you. Amen.
All right, we've heard from Atan Ray.
Hello.
We've heard from John. And who are we speaking to?
This is Kevin. How are you doing?
Kevin, all right. Kevin Ryerson is back. All right, we're doing very fine, Kevin. Had a very interesting discourse. For listeners who have been taking part in this program today, Kevin Ryerson is a trance channel, among other things, and we have been listening to two entities that you allowed to come through today, specifically John and Atan Ray.
Great.
Kevin, we spoke a little bit about the men's and women's movement. As a matter of fact, the goddess movement specifically, and talked a little bit about that spiritual core. You have private knowledge on that too, and I wonder if you might like to just comment a little bit on that yourself.
Yes. I recently had an experience that was intriguing to me. I had struggles with the concept of a men's movement for a while. I felt that the women's movement was a legitimate expression because women had obviously been disinvested in our society and culture. The men's movement bothered me because it seemed to almost emerge as a reaction to the women's movement. I appreciate the depth of the work of Bly, but it always bothered me there was a statement that said that men only become men when they separate themselves from women. I can't somehow agree with that statement. However, there was an experience recently where I was in Angel Fire, New Mexico, and some Native American ceremonies were conducted where they divided the attendants, myself included, into what was called a men's and women's lodge. And the men discussed issues of themselves as men and how they related to women.
Now, before you say this, what was this again?
This was a Native American ceremony that was performed in Angel Fire, New Mexico.
Now, so this is a ceremony that has a tremendous history to itself.
Yes, definitely.
Okay,
it has many, many centuries of history behind it. But in its simplest components, amidst a group of persons, there's a men's lodge and a women's lodge, and you're separated into two different groups, where men discuss issues relevant to themselves as men and relevant to their relationship to women. And also a similar conversation and dialogue occurs amongst the women. However, then both groups come back together and with no words necessarily exchange, but all communication is done silently. You express your feelings and your emotions to each other in a unity. And then 7 days later, after the ceremony, you can speak openly on all the issues that were conversed upon. So it's like you hold it and you incubate it, and then you allow it to give birth and expression to itself.
So it's almost like a male and a female think tank? Is that what it would be like?
I think it's almost more like a male and a female form of reemergence, reunifying, reappreciation of each other. Because the real point that was made is that although men and women found themselves in what was apparently separate lodges, the key is the intent was always to reunify, and at the same time they were never separate because they were still both on the same sacred soil. They still both emerged out of the same collective psychic consciousness. And because I have yet to see that, I suppose, still in the so-called men's and women's movements, as they're identified in our popular media, And in our popular, collective unconscious, I was a little disturbed at first, but the idea that we can still all be unified on the same soil, that greatly appealed to me.
Now, what was, let's look at this thing pragmatically for a minute. After it was over, how did this affect you?
It affected me in the nice sense that I had empowerment to speak with women. And that meant both, it meant both with strength, unapologetically, but hopefully with greater sensitivity, and that the invitation to speak on those issues had been opened.
So as you have gone through, let's say, the last period of time since that, I guess you've found that your relationship with women is different then.
What I have discovered is that there's a great deal that men amongst themselves, by sharing and communicating, can open up their dialogues better with women. And also, as their dialogues with women open up more, their relationships amongst themselves and with women rapidly and greatly improve. And so therefore, the relationships in which we form to gain our success in life is also improved.
All right, now let's digress for a moment. During the time that you are having the channeling experience, you are doing what? For example, some people who channel have told me that they are in a different place studying. Some tell me that it's just dark and quiet.
Can you say that again?
Okay, maybe I'm not being clear. During the channeling experience,
yes.
You step aside, an entity comes through. Are you hearing the entity?
No, it's very similar to the daydreaming experience spoken of before.
Okay, now that's what I was saying. Some channels say that they actually find themselves in different esoteric schools learning information.
Right. That occurs more in my own meditations. I don't feel I need to spend the channeling time during such a process. It's not unusual for artists, for instance, to daydream, come back with a single insight, but the insight itself is so dynamic that it's almost directly proportionate to the amount of time that they would have spent thinking about it to gain the same results.
Now, in the past, we've talked about religion, and quote-unquote religion as it's being perceived right now in Western culture, basically Christianity or Judaism or something like that. And how do you see that part of our culture beginning to integrate with the concepts of mediumship?
I don't think that it's ever been unintegrated. If you look at the works of Jung, who goes into the so-called Gnostic texts, here you will find the concepts of the equality, for instance, between men and women and their ability to access equally altered states and communion with angels as widely open, acknowledged, and practiced. If you look at the charismatics in our Judeo-Christian religious movements, they are speaking in the tongue of angels. They have the gift of interpretation. Even the most orthodox concepts of prayer allow for the experience of the ecstasies, which is the experience of altered states of consciousness where communion with Christ and communion with angelic beings and communion with saints is very direct and personal. So therefore, I would say that it's virtually been an inseparable element of virtually any component of the Judeo-Christian religious movement.
All right, Kevin, we have about 5 minutes left. Why don't we just do a few little closing points here to kind of bring our listeners to some type of resolution?
Okay. Simply put, it sounds like from what was channeled through, Spirit was emphasizing that there's sort of a new spirituality emerging, which I think is really important to emphasize. I think that we can see it in our public broadcasting. I think that we can see it in our religious institutions. The work of Matthew Fox, for instance, in the coming of the cosmic Christ, in my opinion, is a revolutionary concept for the Catholic laity and the Catholic priesthood. The reemergence of the charismatics amongst the more conservative components of the Christian Judeo-Christian community. The interest in the philosophies of Oppenheimer and of Einstein in the scientific community. Everyone is looking more towards the spiritual and ethical components of what it is that they're pursuing, and it's no longer something that retards the work that people are concentrating on. It is something that actually enhances, exhilarates, and helps move forward the quality of life that people want to live. And that, to me, is very exciting, because that is what spirituality was always brought forward, organized, and expressed. That was always its intent, was to move us forward towards the goals that we pursue, rather than acting as a point of resistance.
You know, one of the questions that I asked Anton Ray was, I had asked about the relationship between you as his oracle and he as the entity coming through, and whether you had prearranged that at some time. And while he didn't really give an explanation on that, what is your understanding? Or do you have one?
It's simple. I think that the same thing that basically makes our society able to accomplish its goals, which are through friendships and relationships, having known these entities in other times and other cultures, Spirit has said, and I say, that the relationship that can survive across decades can also survive across lifetimes. Friendship.
So basically, your claim is that, and your understanding, let's say, at this point, is that the two of you are sharing some type of relationship that certainly transcends physicality.
I would say that it survives physicality.
Yeah, transcends and survives it, that's correct.
The limitations of materialism. But that's what friendship is all about. It's really a relationship that's designed to enhance each person's quality of life.
Now, you've used the term in the past, private knowledge. And I remember in an interview that we did a while ago,
yes,
that you had mentioned the idea that you felt that this type of channeling information, this subjective gaining of knowledge, would, and if I hope I'm quoting you correctly, would eventually far surpass our objective way of gaining knowledge.
I think that what we're looking at is that I look at the concept of private knowledge as an issue of belief. My real statement would be is that intuition, the intuitive process, does supersede the methodologies of information gathering used by critical thinking. Intuition is virtually the source of 86% of all the discoveries made in this country on a daily basis. The methods to preserve and validate knowledge used by science, I think, are perfectly valid, per se. The critical review, peer group review, etc., etc. However, it can also raise so much negativity that what's creative and worth preserving sometimes has difficulty in getting out and applied. That's why people need to think more like engineers. In other words, not just grow knowledge, but think in ways in which it can be applied in a useful and constructive manner.
So it's the pragmatic use of this intuitive information that's most
exactly
important.
Exactly, which in my opinion is the pragmatic and constructive application of the spiritual.
Kevin,
yes,
thank you so much for being on the show with me today.
Okay, well, it was a pleasure being here today.
And I wanted to say to all of you who are listening, I want to thank you for tuning in Timeless Voyager Radio. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, and I hope that your own personal voyage through life towards the development of your highest potential is a joyous and successful one.